The Nail in the Coffin!
All right, welcome to the Nail in the Coffin, part of the world famous Evergreen Podcast Network. It's Thursday night. Trav, how are you, man?
You know, doing good, buddy. I'm glad we're finally able to sync up. We've been going back and forth on schedules for a while here.
That's right. When you and I were texting yesterday, I was on my way back to the Newark airport to fly back. Yesterday, I wrapped up my first business trip in, I would say, probably almost a year and a half. Have you had to do any travel, work, or otherwise at all?
I flew to Dallas about a month ago for a wedding. It was not for business, but my wife and I both being vaccinated and everything, and one of my dear, dear friends, Mark, was getting married, and he had pushed it back a year, assuming, okay, we'll be in a good spot. And he's like, yeah, I would have pushed another 6 months if I could have, but you know, we had to sort of agree to what they said and to save ourselves a little bit of money and not get fleeced on it. So we pushed it back a year, and unfortunately it wasn't as clear. But so yeah, I've done post pandemic flying, and other than wearing the mask, honestly, it didn't seem like anything was really that different. I don't love having to have the mask on for 4 hours, 5 hours at a time while I'm sitting on the plane and walking through the airport. So anyone out there who has to still go to work and wear one of those, all the credit in the world to you. Like, that does not seem good. And thanks for doing it. But it seemed relatively normal. And honestly, I generally hate airports and dealing with the flying, but it was kind of refreshing to feel sort of normal again.
Yeah, that part of it was nice for me, but other than that, I would say I got pretty much the full business travel experience in 36 hours. So I had to fly into Philadelphia and then fly back from Newark because our offices.
I've done that actually. Vice versa. The other order. I flew into Newark and out of Philly.
Yeah, you take what you can get in terms of nonstop flights involving Cleveland at this point. Oh, yeah. So that was kind of what I had to do. And our offices are kind of halfway in between, so it didn't really matter which airport I was in as far as that goes. But yeah, flying into Philadelphia yesterday, they relocated the ride sharing pickup area. And something I did not consider was that nobody wants to drive for ride sharing services right now because of the pandemic. So yeah, rates are through the roof, and the wait for getting somebody to pick you up is forever. So it took me over an hour and three failed rides before somebody could finally come get me and take me to my hotel. And then my credit card got declined because it had been so long since I had needed to use a ride sharing service. And I was out of town that when I went to go update my credit card information, my bank thought, like, well,
there's no way this is real.
Yeah, it's exactly right. So they flagged it, and I had to, you know, go back and forth with them. And then the coup de grace was yesterday, the flight home. I had three screaming kids, full throat for the entire duration of the flight, taking turns, blowing out my eardrums. I was trying to listen to something on my headphones. I had the volume up all the way, and I still couldn't hear what the people were
saying.
Oh, you
got to get the noise canceling, man. Yeah, well, got to suck your game up.
No, I've got those, but I love my AirPods because they're small.
They don't have the pros.
No, I didn't
know. Pros are nice. It's worth the upgrade. That's my advice to you, my friend. But yeah, no, it's weird. It's like back when I was traveling a lot for work, I feel like I cursed it all the time. It's like, oh, this is a pain in the ass. This sucks. Yeah. And then I went and did it again. I'm like, you know what? I kind of miss this a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I like getting to other cities. It was nice. And you know,
I don't know if Newark really hits the mark, but...
Well, I was really, I mean, where our offices are, we're kind of in a suburb that reminds me a little bit of like a, I don't know, almost like a Madison or a Concord.
Okay. Oh, nice.
So, yeah. And that was fine. What was weird for me is, you know, I was working from home even prior to the pandemic for well over a year. So yesterday, I think, was probably the first time I was in an actual office setting with cubicles and coworkers in probably almost 3 years. So that was like a fun novelty, and I was like, this is great for a day, but you know what? I am glad to be home.
Bye. Yeah. Well, good. Glad you got that out of your system and you're reacclimated.
Yeah, scratch that itch. That's enough.
There you
go. I'll see you in another 3 years.
Nice.
Let me ask you this, just to shift gears here, and as we actually get into some sports talk, I am curious, how would you characterize your interest level in the Indians and really baseball in general right now?
Okay, so baseball in general, slim to none. And that's honestly not that different from years past. Even when the Indians have been, you know, even in the after the World Series season, when I spent a bunch of money, and I know people will quibble with whether that was a bunch of money or not. Even after, like, they went to the World Series and they were winning 95, 100 games and were great and expected to do big things, I was never all that interested in watching other teams play. I would rarely, if ever, put on another baseball game just to sit down and watch it.
Did you ever, like, back in the day when you were a kid?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. No, I mean, if I was bored and, like, there was nothing else on and I flipped it to ESPN and they happened to have baseball, I might leave it on while I was doing other stuff. But if it wasn't playoff baseball, I was never into watching other teams that I don't care about play. And truthfully, I do that very little in other sports as well. Like, I'll watch some NBA because I like LeBron. I'll watch the Lakers every once in a while. Like, I watched them last night. I'll watch NFL's obviously a little different because it's once a week and, you know, it's just a different sort of thing. But
it feels more like an event every week.
Right. And you just put it on while you're doing the, you know, whatever NFL game is on, you're flipping it on and you're watching other stuff, or you're doing other stuff, even if your team's not playing. But baseball, there's so many damn games that, like, I don't really care about other teams. I am still, for all the gripes and complaints about how good the Indians were going to be at the beginning of the season, they've obviously overachieved a little bit. How much? I don't know. The pitching's obviously really good. The lineup still leaves a little bit to a lot to be desired. But I like the team. I like watching them. I'll still flip them on at night and catch the second half of most games. It's hard for me to watch an entire game because I got a wife who could not care less about a baseball game. So I'm usually tuning in around the fifth, sixth, seventh inning after she goes to bed, and then I'll watch it while I'm hanging out, having a beer and relax around the house. And that honestly hasn't changed that much. It's not that different from years past, even though my expectations aren't as high. Like, I'm not expecting them, even if they do somehow manage to, you know, win 90 something games, and which they're on pace to do, even if they manage to do that and sneak one of those wild card spots or somehow win the division and get in the playoffs, I'm not expecting them to be a great team that goes on a huge run. And that, it's funny because I think I look at the Indians very similar to how you look at the Cavs right now. Mm. I don't need them to be great. I don't need them to win every night. I want them to be competitive. I want them to look like they're making strides. And yes, the Indians, I think, have a much better chance of winning something significant in the near future compared to the Cavs. But I'm okay with them not being, you know, I mean, they've been one of the, far and away one of the best teams in baseball the last 5, 6, 7 years.
Right.
I'm okay with the expectation that they're not going to be great. Winning 90 games will be a significant achievement if they can do it. And that might be about the peak, is getting into the playoffs and not doing a whole lot, but I'm okay. I'm kind of okay with it. And honestly, baseball in general and Indians baseball is one of these things that in the summer, when it's nice outside and I can crack a window and I'm sitting around at night by myself, I just like to put on baseball and I like to watch the Indians play.
Yeah. And just for context, I think I'm in pretty similar of a position as you are. I think I probably watched a little bit more non-Indians as a kid. One of my favorite things was, you know, I don't really like the Cubs very much now for obvious reasons, but.
Oh, WGN.
Back in the day, the WGN, come home from school.
What a value prop that was.
Oh, it was fantastic. You get those WGN, like, weekday afternoon games, Harry Carey and the whole nine yards, and, you know, the WGN cameramen doing their magic. we'll leave that at that. And I loved watching baseball tonight.
Great for a 12-year-old Tom Valentino. Speaking my language.
No, but baseball tonight, every night on ESPN, I loved watching that. I didn't watch a ton of games, you know, out of market.
See, I actually, and that's a good call, because I actually liked that. I liked that aspect of it. I loved seeing what other teams were doing. I love like web gems and all that
web
stuff.
Web gems,
I liked the
and
recap.
Then the screaming ball for the home runs at the end of the night.
And I liked the recap. And every once in a while, like, I can remember flipping over if there was something noteworthy to watch.
Yeah.
Like, you know, during the Maguire Sosa years, you'd flip over and watch Cardinals games that you wouldn't otherwise watch, or Cubs games you wouldn't otherwise watch.
Sure.
And even for Bonds. And like, and I loved Ken Griffey. I was talking to someone about this the other day. I loved Ken Griffey Jr., even as he had no relation to my team and oftentimes was in direct conflict with the team that I rooted for. Just thought he was the coolest like guy to ever play the game of baseball. And I still stand by that. And I'm not sure anyone's come close since.
I will stand by it that his swing is one of the most aesthetically pleasing things in all of sports.
I can't disagree with it. I can't disagree
with it. It's just fantastic. I was so excited when I got to actually go to a game when they were playing against the Reds. And I had seen him before when he was with the Mariners, but it was kind of getting towards the end of his career. Weren't really sure how many more years he had left.
Swing was still there, though.
Oh, it was still awesome.
Obviously, a little less pop. Not quite as quick, and lost a step or two, but that swing was
legendary. So anyway, this is all a long-winded way of getting to the point of, in recent years, I've been pretty much into the Indians, even if I'm not watching hardly anything non-Indians as far as baseball goes. But this year, and this is nothing against the Indians, I know people are going to grumble about them, you know, trading some guys and cutting payroll and, you know, all the stuff that's been beaten into the ground about the Dolans, blah, blah, blah. This is none of that. I have had a really, really hard time getting interested in baseball, even beyond the Indians, just watching baseball. And I've really been wrestling with why. And I think, you know, I've seen a couple conversations online, and I saw an article that I think Lindsay Adler, who covers the Yankees for The Athletic, wrote either last week or the week before. And I think there is a general shift in how baseball is played now, that there are two roads that have really diverged between success and entertaining.
And pun intended there with the there has been a shift.
That's right. Yeah. Well, there's that too. But I'm just thinking more in terms of how teams are having their players, you know, approach their at bats at the plate.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a really heavy emphasis now on the three true outcomes, they call it, you know, home run, strikeout, walk. And teams are fine with a higher number of strikeouts because they want their guys, you know, it's launch angle, it's, you know, trying to, you know,
extra bases, driving runs,
hitting home runs.
For power,
and if it leads to more strikeouts, fine. And it, you know, you look at the numbers now, the major league batting average is the lowest it's been since 1968, which was the year before they lowered the mound. That was like the year of the pitcher. So, I mean, you got to go way back there. MLB teams are striking out almost 9 times a game. That's the highest strikeout rate ever. That's been a steady line climbing up. And walks are just below their all-time high. And, you know, the thing is, that's leading to fewer balls put in play, fewer guys, you know, fewer plays on the bases. There's less action. I think it was Andre Knott that was talking about this on his podcast a couple weeks ago. You know, between strikeouts, walks, inning changes, pitching changes, it's entirely conceivable that you could go 20, 25 minutes without seeing a ball put in play. And that is really rough, unless you were like super hardcore into baseball. And, you know, if you're a casual, which frankly I am at this point, like that is not drawing me in as a viewer, as a consumer. And, you know, I think the problem is, you know, the data and the advanced statistics and, you know, that dirty word everybody loves to throw around, analytics, it is done its, all of that's done its job in terms of identifying strategies that are, you know, the most effective way to solve the puzzle of maximizing your run output. But it's led to a real homogenization, I guess there's your dollar word for the day, yeah, of, you know, how teams play. And this isn't just a, and you know, it's one of those things where it's like baseball at its base level, it's an entertainment venue. It, you know, it's an entertainment product, but the guys who are managing, the guys who are coaching, the guys who are playing are being paid and, you know, employed based on success. And what is the most successful approach isn't necessarily the most entertaining approach. And, you know, that ruthless efficiency, I don't think it makes for a very entertaining product. And, you know, we can go on this in a second, but I this is not just a problem in baseball, and it's not really even just a problem in sports, but at least for me right now, in terms of baseball, because that's what's in season, that's something I've been struggling with.
Yeah, and we've actually, I feel like we've had this conversation before, and I know back when I was on the Facebooks, it would be a common refrain from people watching Indians. People would grow like frustrated with guys like Lindor and these guys who were really like constantly just hitting for power, and they'd say, you know, I really want a guy who can like go opposite field and can get like base hits and things like that. And I was like, and at the time, and my opinion hasn't changed, but at the time I would respond to these people like, okay, do you want a guy who is less productive and helps your team win less? Because right, that's what it does. That's what the numbers tell us it does, right? They're not telling all these guys to try and elevate the ball and go for, you know, try to get extra bases more and hit more for power than for average. They're not telling them that for fun. They're telling them that because they know that that increases your chances of winning a game.
Right.
And so it puts you in a very tough spot where I agree with you. Like, I love, to an extent, I don't love like bunts and like moving guys over and all that crap.
No.
I love situational hitting and guys that, yeah, can hit the ball anywhere. And, you know, if you got a guy on second or third, you know, this guy's going to put the ball in play. Like, I love that stuff.
Plays at the plate, plays at bases, you know.
Those are fun.
Yeah.
Those are exciting. I like that stuff. And I like, hey, if there's a guy on second, this next guy coming up, I got a feeling he's going to get a hit. I don't like the feeling like, okay, we got a bunt to move the guy over, and then we need to sacrifice.
Right,
like,
right.
All this other stuff. And the game has turned into that. And it's hard because, like you said, ownership, managers, even players to an extent, they're being rewarded on how much they contribute to their team winning.
Right.
And so it's hard to go to them and say, we know that this action helps the team more. It's more likely to result in runs produced. And ultimately, you win games by scoring runs. It's more likely to result in a run produced than the other approach. But it's not quite as fun from a spectator perspective. They're always going to go on the side of the winning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so it's like, how do you really justify the, or what's the balance, and what can baseball do to make it more, back to what you said, aesthetically pleasing,
well,
and more entertaining?
There's the wrinkle, and baseball has addressed this. This is what that Athletic article that I mentioned earlier got into. Major League Baseball this year actually tweaked the baseball to limit home runs, or at least reduce them a little bit. And the premise of this article was Major League Baseball tweaked the baseball, and it's had the unintended effect of making pitchers even more dominant. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I read it, and I'm like, you know, I think that's the wrong takeaway. I think this is absolutely having the intended effect of the change, because the problem is, I don't think teams have responded in how they are approaching at bats from an offensive perspective. You know, you look at a team like Minnesota that I think was, you know, a little bit more home run reliant, and they went out and spent money this offseason, and I think they might have the worst record in baseball right now. you know, and there's a lot of teams that are finding out the hard way that balls that might have been home runs last year are now
homers anymore.
They're dying on the warning track, and it's, you know, it ends up making pitchers' numbers look better. And until teams,
it also
start
makes Matt
approach,
Underwood look a lot worse.
Oh boy, that's that goes back a ways.
There was one the other day that I was like laughing my ass off watching. He was like halfway into, I tweeted this out, he was halfway into he's out of room, and he was about 20 feet short of the wall, and when this guy catches it,
the narrator, yeah. In fact, he did have room. Lots of room.
He's out of room. Just kidding. No, he isn't. He caught it with plenty of room to spare.
Yeah, so it's something I think it's going to be interesting to keep an eye on as the season goes on. I mean, we're, 40-something games into the season. Maybe teams are starting to, you know, get an idea that, hey, you really can't do it this way anymore. You got to kind of change things up. I wonder if that's going to be something that's noticeable the rest of the season.
Okay, I'll interrupt and throw this at you. Do you think it's a bit of an equalizer where, I mean, we can look at the Indians. They're not a very good hitting team. Look at their lineup. I don't care what their record is. Right. Honestly, I don't know where they're at in the, like, statistically, where they're at in terms of runs scored and batting and all that stuff. They might be higher than I think. I don't know. But do you think it makes a team like that not makes the gap between them and a team that has a strong lineup much smaller.
Levels the playing field a little bit.
Because obviously the Indians' strength is the pitching anyways. So helping pitchers and hurting batters is naturally going to help the Indians. But do you think that's a factor in, I don't want to say success because they haven't been great. They've been good, not great, but
right,
a factor in their early success this year.
That's an interesting theory. I hadn't really thought of it that way. And I think the back end of the rotation, frankly, has not been quite as good as
not
it has been,
as good
in recent
as we
years.
You know? But it's basically been a 7-run game for them.
Yeah. The bullpen, the back end of the bullpen has been
fantastic.
Karinchak
and Klase have been basically shortened the game.
Brian Shaw is even turning back the clock here a little bit.
Who
unbelievable.
Saw that coming? Love Brian Shaw. Love B. Shaw.
Yeah.
Shout out B. Shaw.
There you go.
Friend of the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's true. I'm hoping that I talk it into existence.
Who's to say no? But no, I was just going to say, though, this whole the impact of data on sports. I mean, I think it's a real issue with basketball right now. I mean, you look at shot charts and every team, I mean, there used to be, you look 10, 15 years ago, there was a real diversity in styles. I mean, the Suns were notorious for their 7 seconds or less. And then you can go back further to, you know, some of those teams in the Eastern Conference that played bully ball all the time. And, and really, I don't think there's that kind of diversity now between teams. Everybody.
No, if you can't shoot at a decent level, you're fucked.
It's either three pointers or you need to get at the rim. You need to get deep into the paint, and anything in the mid range is a terrible idea, and you should be ashamed for even thinking about
it. Yeah, I mean, like DeMar DeRozan is an example. Like, great player. Like, if he was 10 years older and he started in the league 10 years earlier, like he would have been like a perennial like superstar. But that mid-range game that he is so good at, and that's kind of all he's good at. Like, he's not a good three-point shooter. He's not a big, like, get-to-the-rim guy. He's good at it, but he's not great at it. Like, his style just doesn't fit in today's NBA. And you're right. Like, and it raises the question, how do you combat, or how do you tell a team, hey, I know this thing gives you a better chance of winning, but this thing is a better product, so do this other thing instead.
I think we might actually, I don't know what the answer is, but I do think at some point in the next couple of years, we're going to see some tweaks to the rules in the NBA to try to level that out a little bit. Because there's been some talk among some front office people just about that. That, you know, the game's getting tilted too far in one direction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I know some of the things that they've already been talking about is trying to cut down on some of the, you know, bullshit fouls that have gotten drawn and discouraging
the James Harden, Trae Young
Right. Yeah. Grifting.
Yeah.
So I think that's one thing that you might see an immediate change, and hopefully that has an effect on improving the product a little bit. But I do think there are other things that are going to be looked at here in the coming years. Let me ask you this, just going back to baseball for a minute. Has baseball made any changes in the last couple of years that you feel like have made the game a better product?
So I'm not going to count last year, because it was weird. Yeah. I guess they kept, I'll be honest, I kind of hated it at first, but I think the starting a guy in extra innings on second base, I think it's good.
I feel a little dirty for saying like this, it. But I kind
actually
of agree.
Like it. I hated it at first. I'm like, that's a terrible idea, but I kind of like it. Like, I've seen several extra inning games, and when that first team, like, I like the fact that the first team, the home team, if the home team can get out without giving up a run, it feels like, okay, let's go, let's get right. it. And there's a couple times where they don't get it, and you're like, well, shit, we screwed that up. And it's like, I actually think it's good.
It is bizarre that theoretically somebody could throw a perfect game and lose now.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of always could.
No, because a perfect game, nobody gets on base. But with...
So how could that run score if you threw a perfect game?
Well, in this scenario, with starting a runner on second, you know, that guy didn't reach base because of anything the pitcher did. They're starting the inning there. At that point, you sacrifice him over to third, sacrifice fly, and he scores. So you just record. You could still end up facing the minimum through 10 innings and lose 1-0. The odds of that ever happening are insanely low, although...
Yeah, Pedro Martinez would tell you.
Yeah. But, I don't know. But, like, you know, some of the other changes that I feel like baseball has made, like, I hate the 3-batter minimum. I don't think it's actually...
I'll be honest with you. I forgot, until you asked me that question, I forgot that that was a rule. I don't think I've ever seen it come into play this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things that... When it was introduced, I remember we said, boy, that's going to work against the Indians because they led the league in one batter.
They were pitching matchups a lot, yeah.
Yeah, the old ready lefty special. So I don't know necessarily how much that's actually played out that way, but I don't think it's improved game times at all.
I'll tell you a rule change that has been worse, and it was a rule change that they undid, was the DH in the National League. They had it last year, and it was good. And then they undid it, and they went back to pitchers hitting, and that's a bad rule.
Unless it's Shohei Ohtani, yeah.
or unless it's screwing with Tony La Russa, and he doesn't know the damn rules.
he knows the unwritten rules, though. Not so good on the written rules.
What a clown. I'll be honest. The biggest thing... that to me says, hey, the Indians might be able to win this division is the fact that Tony La Russa is the manager for the White Sox.
It is so bizarre. He's cannot believe.
Garbage.
How long he was out of baseball. that's unbelievable to me.
Who thinks that's the direction we need to go? Yeah, let's bring this guy back in. We got this really young team that hits the ball really well and has all these, and it's built for the new. Like, I think the White Sox are a damn good team, honestly. I think they're built really well to be a damn good team for a few years. And they bring in this guy who just has no fucking idea how baseball's played now.
Well, it's a long season, but so far he hasn't
He hasn't sunk the ship yet.
Right. We'll see.
But to answer your initial question, no, I don't think any have been worse. Like I said, the only one that really jumps out to me is the guy starting on second base and extras. I think that was surprisingly a good change.
Yeah. On the topic of changes, the NBA implemented a big one that we've seen, you know, go into effect this week, the play-in. I don't know why they're not classifying this as part of the playoffs. I mean, it's part of the playoffs. They're seeded like playoff seeds, and it's an elimination. I just call it part of the playoff. I don't think anybody would be offended by that.
It ended a very impressive streak that I saw yesterday. And I don't know if you saw this, if you watched the end of the who did the Spurs lose to? Memphis? Yeah.
Yes.
Spurs Memphis. They showed it at the end of the Spurs Grizzlies game. the Spurs had gone 45 years without missing the playoffs 2 years in a row.
Oh, my God.
Which is just insane stat. Wow. Like, bananas stat. 45 years.
That's
unbelievable. Missed it last year, and now technically they missed it this year, which I think is fair, because now that there's two more teams in there, if you're going to talk this streak, it shouldn't count if you were the 10 or whatever the hell they were. But and I get so, and so I think that's sort of why it matters and why they're not counting it. Not that anyone really cares about streaks like that.
Got to protect the integrity of the Spurs postseason.
Right, right, exactly.
No, I'll tell you, like, this is one of those things where I'm a traditionalist in terms of, like, the 16-team bracket. And, you know, I've seen these ideas thrown out about mixing, just doing like a 1 through 16 and getting rid of the conferences. I've hated that idea. In part because of the Cavs benefiting because from being in the East. But that's neither here nor there, especially now. But I will tell you, the play-in, I like it. And it's been fun. It's kind of given a little do-or-die sense.
How much of it did you watch?
I was in my hotel room on Tuesday night. I watched the second half of the Celtics Wizards, I think it was. And then last night while I was flying back, my plane had a TV, so I was able to catch some of the first game, the Spurs Grizzlies, and then I watched as much of the Lakers and Warriors as I could before I fell asleep. So
it's funny you call that out, because that actually is the one time I would always watch random baseball games or basketball games. So when I was on the road for work and it's like, nothing else is on, I'll throw on TNT or whatever, you know. Yeah, good call out.
Yeah. So that was nice. I tried to hang in as much as I could last night for the late game. I'll tell you, you know who did stay up and watch that was apparently the rest of America. That
huge
rating
number
for that game last
huge
night.
Huge number. It's funny because I've been hearing from a lot of guys with like Oakleys and red hats that the NBA was dying.
I hate getting into TV rating discussions because every single thing is down. And it's just the nature of television in general right now. But, that game, the Lakers-Warriors, had the highest rating for a game on ESPN since the 2019 conference finals, I think I saw. And it peaked between 12:30 a.m. and 1 a.m. So for everybody complaining, why are they starting this game at 10 o'clock? I don't think it was that big of a problem.
No, and I did complain because I would have liked to watch it earlier.
Yeah.
And I was tired. Like, I was watching, even as the game was getting very interesting, I was tired. And I'm like, God, I wish I could go to bed right now. But it's also pretty unique circumstances. It's basically a game. It's not really basically, because Golden State's not eliminated, but it was basically a game 7 with LeBron and Steph Curry.
Sure.
In before round 1 even started. Like, there's no other scenario really where I'm even turning that game on last night.
It would have been super fun if that was actually an elimination game and the loser didn't have the chance at basically.
So I texted you earlier this week. I thought that it was.
Right.
I did not know the format.
I could not believe how many people, and you know, you're not watching the NBA religiously, so that's fine. But like,
I really only pay attention to the Cavs, and the Cavs are giving me a whole lot to pay attention to. So
right. But like, I could not get over the number of people who were in jobs that should know better, who were openly admitting they did not know.
Yeah, for the record, I don't make money off of my knowledge of the NBA. I'm not speaking about sports on a daily basis.
Yeah, there were, I'm not going to name names, but there were people who, frankly, I think should have kept that under their hat, because that's not a good look.
No names, please.
I wouldn't expect that to, but that would also imply that I was listening to him. That's not happening.
Not going to happen.
No, but you know, the thing is, the NBA caught lightning in a bottle a little bit, getting LeBron versus Steph. And you know, it's already.
And like what turned out to be a great finish to the game. Right.
And you're not going to get that again next year. So inevitably that rating is not going to be as good for that game next year. And everybody's like, oh, look, it was down.
Down a lot.
Another bad faith argument. You can already pencil it in for next year. But the flip side of that is, I think the TNT games even drew 60% better than typical regular season games for them. So, you know, even if it wasn't doing LeBron versus Steph numbers, it was still doing great business for them. So I would have to imagine, I'd be shocked if this doesn't become the new normal going forward.
And those numbers are good, but like if you look at the matchups outside of the Warriors and Lakers, none of those are really like sexy games.
No, not at all.
Charlotte, Indiana. That's no one cares about. I would bet that a lot of people don't know anyone that plays in either of those teams. Like Washington and Boston, that's good because you got like Russell Westbrook and Beal against like Tatum and Brown. Like that's if for people that pay attention to the NBA, that's a good game. But for the casual fan, that's not super inviting, right? San Antonio and Memphis obviously doesn't bring much.
Yeah,
like these weren't like sexy, exciting matchups. It's not like there was a ton other than the Lakers Warriors game yesterday, which obviously had a ton of stuff going on with it. There wasn't a lot except like, oh, okay, there's a little bit of a twist here. Does the novelty maybe wear off with that next year? That's something that I think could be valid. Like, okay, well, whatever. This is the way they did it. And who knows if I really care about it going forward. And it was the first time they tried this format.
So I do think, I mean, the TV will probably go down a little bit next year as the novelty of this whole thing wears off.
Even if you discount the Lakers-Warriors game.
Right.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
I would still say I think it still has long-term value because I think it was...
There's not many high-stakes game ones.
Well, no, but there's that. And then the other thing is I think it really improved the stretch run of the regular season, which is something that the NBA has really struggled with for a long time. I've generally hated what the NBA has done to the lottery odds. I think it's terrible. And I'm not just saying that because the Cavs have really gotten screwed the last 3 years. I think it was solving a problem that wasn't necessarily there. You know, not every team that's bad is also tanking. Some teams are just bad and actually need to have decent odds at getting an above average talent in the draft. But what I think the whole play-in thing did was it got more teams at the bottom that probably would have packed it in sooner. It got them, it gave them a reason to keep playing to actually make the tournament. And then it had the layer on top of that with those teams in that 6, 7, 8 range, they're playing to try to avoid falling into that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's quite a few teams that's a good chunk of the league that in other scenarios really wouldn't have a ton of interest to, you know, be playing as hard at that point that now they whether they're just trying to get in period or they're trying to avoid the play in and get a better seat on top of that. A lot of good reasons all around to, you know, be playing hard at the end of the year.
Yeah, I do think it maybe made a little more sense. And I still think some of this year was obviously this season was still a little bit wonky, right?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't a traditional season and they were dangerously close to Memphis getting in ahead of the Warriors, which clearly is not beneficial for the NBA. Obviously it ended up with the Warriors getting the 8 seed game ahead of Memphis, but like it gave them sort of a little bit of breathing room to say, okay, these teams that are pretty good and maybe had some unexpected challenges during the regular season sort of got a chance to like to redeem themselves and get back into it. And that's good. I guess I'm still a little torn on whether I think it's good long-term, whether I think it's something that should remain and be sort of a permanent fixture. I'll be honest with you. I don't really care that much about how important the end of the regular season is.
It just makes the games a little bit more watchable and it gives us something else to talk about besides having,
I guess from an entertainment time perspective, for the playoffs, that's fine.
Yeah.
As you know me, and I talk about this, this is sort of a big reason that I am opposed to the playoff and expanding the playoff in college football is I don't really care. And it's because I'm a huge college football fan. I don't really care if you make it more appealing to everyone.
Right.
I care that you find the best teams. And so, like, in this case, it's a little different because
I was saying with college football, the changes they're making have kind of devalued the regular season. Whereas I feel like the change the NBA
is the opposite. That's
here
true.
Is actually making the end of the regular season better.
That's true.
NBA but regular season, other than like Christmas Day and, you know, a handful of games the rest of the year. It's kind of a rough watch at times.
That's true. And actually, I guess now that you say it, now that I think about it a little bit more, because I didn't put a whole lot of thought into what I think of it. I just sort of went with my gut here. I think maybe the NBA could benefit greatly from having a more consequential regular season.
Yeah.
Because they haven't. I mean, for a long time. Like, when's the last time, like, the regular season really legitimately mattered?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, teams need to win enough games, but I mean, look at the Cavs. If the Cavs were a 1 seed or a 4 seed or a 7 seed, when they have LeBron, for example, if they were a 1 or a 4 or 7, you didn't care.
Right.
You just wanted to get to the playoffs.
Yeah.
And that, and I was okay with that at the time, because that was like the model we had, but maybe it's okay to make the regular season more important.
Sure. So it'll be interesting to follow. We'll see where it goes. And frankly, I think having that play in is probably going to be the Cavs' best ticket to playing meaningful games at the end of the regular season, at least for next year.
Trying to scrap for that 10.
We'll see what happens. I've got thoughts, but we'll save that for another.
Oh, you got thoughts? You got takes? Are they hot?
Hot takes, baby.
Are they hot?
Pew, pew, pew.
Give it to me. No. Finger guns? Love it. No. Love it.
All right.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Anyways.
Let's shift to the Browns schedule. As we're talking about regular season schedules, the Browns schedule has come out, and you know, hats off to the NFL for finding yet another way to dominate the sports headlines and airwaves in what should be a completely irrelevant month.
Completely irrelevant.
So, but yeah, I mean, the 3 or 4 days leading up to that schedule release, I was scouring all the forums and all the
looking for the leaks.
Yep. And they got my interest peaked.
You know, my favorite, I did see one leak, and it was by far my favorite one, and it was it had, I think, 4 weeks of Browns games. The one was the first round bye in the playoffs. The second was hosting the divisional round. The third was hosting the championship, and the third was winning the Super Bowl. So I was very cool with that leak. I was on board with it.
Good leak. Let's follow that guy.
He's a good guy. Yeah, that guy. He's a good guy.
So what games are you fired up for on this slate here?
I'll be honest. My initial instinct was that the Chiefs game was kind of a dick move. A completely reinvented defense for a very good team, but I also get why they did it.
Yeah.
And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, okay, get that game out of the way. Like, if they win it, great. If they lose it, okay, you can explain it away and you can build on it, and they get to bounce back against Houston. They did them a favor by giving them Houston in week two. So right. So you can bounce back the following week at home against Houston, and you're all good. So I sort of dialed back my disdain around that specific aspect of it. The part that's weird, and they did the Browns a huge favor here, and obviously everyone sort of talked about this ad nauseum. I don't know if this has ever happened before, but have we ever played the same team two games in a row?
That's, I don't think the Browns have, but I think that has happened at least one other time.
And the fact that we play Ravens, have a week off, and then play them again while they have to play the Steelers in the middle is okay. Sucks for the Ravens, but fuck them. What do I care?
Yeah,
like,
you know,
I don't know. Other than that, honestly, nothing really. I do think it was weird. Sorry, I know you keep like jumping in, and I'm going. But I think it kind of stinks. It feels like the premier opponents and the premier like prime games that would be prime time or would be a candidate for prime time or will be a big sort of game that people are watching are all on the road, it yeah. seems like.
So interesting that you mentioned that. I had a couple takeaways from looking at this. The first one is that one way or another, it seems like the Browns are going to be playing Aaron Rodgers in a very high-profile game because they're scheduled to play the Packers on Christmas Day, and that's a if it's not primetime, it's at least a full national game. That's one of the signature games of the year for the NFL. And if he happens to get traded, all signs are that it would be to Denver, who the Browns get in their one home primetime game in the middle of the season. So it seems like Browns versus Aaron Rodgers in a high profile spot is going to happen one way or the other. And the other thing that I came away from with this is that the NFL schedule makers have a lot of respect for the Browns because they put them in that week one game against the Chiefs. That's a very high profile 425. Now the 405 games are just your typical regional games. They get sent to the, you know, markets of the competing teams and, you know, other ones to kind of, you know, fill in the map or whatever. But if you see a game at 425, it's typically like, you know, the biggest game of the afternoon. So to get that in week one against the Chiefs, that's a really big deal. And then, you know, the other ones that we're looking at, those are, you know, you got the Broncos game in week seven. And then after that, that Sunday night football game isn't until Thanksgiving weekend. The Packers game isn't until Christmas Day. And then the Monday nighter isn't until the second to last week of the season. Now, Monday night football is going to have flex scheduling, I think, starting next year, maybe the week, maybe the year after. It might be 23. But for now, there's no flex scheduling for Monday night. So if you're putting a team on Monday night that late in the year, that
you're both, you know, you're locked into it.
You are, and you know, you're showing some confidence. And you know, I think the NFL knew that an Aaron Rodgers trade is possible, because if you look at it with the way that the schedule was set up, the Broncos could very easily, if they end up getting him in June, because I think with salary cap stuff, that is when it would happen. If it does, it would be very easy to slot them into some high profile slots. Like they're also playing at 425 on the first week of the season over on Fox. And right now that's like, cause like both networks, the first week have a doubleheader for the first time. That didn't used to be the thing, but with the extra week of the season, now that happens. So that was going to be Fox's like alternate game, but they could really easily make the Broncos like their A game that day. And there's a bunch of other instances of that. So the long and short of it is, you know, putting the Browns in most of their primetime appearances later in the year really shows that, you know, you're not, you really think they're going to still be there and they're going to be a contending team. They're going to be a good team. Because if you don't have a lot of confidence and you want to kind of give them a shot, you're going to put their primetime game on early in the year before the wheels fall off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think the other thing that sort of jumped out at me, and we knew their opponents for a while, so this wasn't a new revelation, but there's not a whole lot of like gimmies on their schedule. And when I looked at it, I'm like, okay, Houston should be a lock. There's a couple others that should be like pretty comfortable. They should be the favorite and they should be the better team. But there's not a lot that are like, for no offense to the Browns, but in the years past, like the Browns on other teams' schedules, right? And, yeah. You know, when other teams would see the Browns, they'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a win. And they were right 9 times out of 10. And there aren't many of those on the Browns' schedule. And as I started to think about it, there's not many of those in the league at all. I feel like right now, the league is even the worst. There's a couple teams that are really bad, but there's not many. Right. There's not many teams where you're like, yeah, this is a comfortable win.
Yeah, I mean, most of the bad teams right now have got interesting guys or at least promising quarterbacks, you know, coming up, quarterback prospects anyway. I mean, yeah. You keep kind of referencing Houston as a win, but I mean, if Deshaun Watson's playing,
that's true.
In that
game, Deshaun Watson's a stud. Like,
I yeah. can't.
That's not. It's not a gimme. I don't know. They're being. I guess I only say that because I think that. I think according to Vegas, they're one of like two or three like lowest win total teams in the league.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Exactly. My point. Like
we could be seeing Justin Fields in week three. I mean.
Right. Right. Exactly. And if and the Bears are a solid team, they're trotting out Andy Dalton. Andy Dalton.
I hope they're still trotting out Andy Dolphin by week three. Or
Andy Dolphin. Dolphin. Andy Dolphin. Andy Dolphin, because he's gonna be swimming with the fishes. Hey-o. Nailed it. Nailed it.
There it is.
No, it's weird because I mean they're not like yeah, Houston, their win total is really low. I think it's amongst the lowest in the NFL. But if Deshaun Watson came out and just lit you up, it wouldn't stun you.
Right.
It would frustrate you. You'd be a little annoyed by it. You'd be like, yeah, it doesn't have shit else around him, but you'd also be like, okay, it's Deshaun Watson. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. There's only a couple teams where you look at it and you're like, yeah, if we lost to them, I'm going to be real stunned.
In general, the slate of quarterbacks the Browns have to face this year is really good, I think.
It's brutal. Yeah, Pat
Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, you know, you could be seeing Justin Fields in week three. I guess Kirk Cousins isn't particularly exciting with the Vikings.
But he's also not a gimme. That's the thing. Like, yeah, he's one of the worst quarterbacks they'll play, but he's won a lot of games. He's
Herbert
stepped up a lot.
With the Chargers, Kyler Murray, whoever the Broncos put out there, we get Big Ben. Joe Burrow's exciting. He should be.
Oh, yeah. Side note, there are few things in the world that I enjoy right now more than the Steelers hanging this season on Big Ben.
Yeah, good luck.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. I didn't have many draft takes, but their approach to the offensive line was head scratching. I'm not Mel Kiper, but
I think it was I was cackling. I was not scratching my head.
Yeah.
I was laughing wholeheartedly.
Yeah. So it'll be fun. I'm definitely
but not to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
Continue. I was gonna say, okay, so after Arizona, Kyler Murray. Good player, like who knows what he could be, but he's shown a lot of promise, could be a really good player. Denver, that's the one where if they don't get Rodgers, that should definitely be a win because Drew Lock sucks. I don't care what anybody says. He sucks. And it's one of the things I looked at, like there's not a ton of teams in the league that don't feel like they have their quarterback. Pittsburgh, I don't know that they're convinced. I don't know how confident they are with Roethlisberger. Who knows, right? That's probably one of the bigger question marks on their schedule. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow seems like the real deal. Seems like he's a guy that's going to be good for a long time for them. Whether he'll be, up for it by that point, because it'll still only be, his 10th, 11th, 12th game, who knows. But they look like a drastically improved team. I think they should have gone Penei Sewell in the draft, but Ja'Marr Chase can be a great player for him, so they look like they'll be good. The Patriots are another one. We're traveling to Foxborough. Cam Newton, really? Is it going to be Cam Newton or is it going to be Mac Jones? I'm not worried about either one of them.
No.
The Lions.
I'm interested. I will be interested to see what Cam looks like this year because I feel like
he looks like he hit that wall, like guys hit where his arm's just gone.
Well, no. Here's why I say that though. I feel like early in the season last year, he had a few games where he looked awesome. What was where did they play? Was it Seattle? It was a Sunday night game when I feel like he played really well. And it was some sort of a primetime game where I thought he really balled out. But then he got COVID in the middle of the year, and he never really looked right when he came back after that. And I just kind of wonder if now you give him an off season to hopefully get healthy, if maybe he's got a little bit left in the tank. Maybe he has a little bit of a resurgence or, maybe that's it for him. We'll see.
Maybe it could be. It'll all come down to whether he can still throw the ball or not, ultimately.
Right.
Then they play Detroit, which I think Detroit's one of the worst teams in the league. That's probably, I guess now that I look at it, that's probably the biggest gimme on their schedule because they downgraded at quarterback. I don't know that they really got that much better anywhere. I personally think they should have drafted Fields. He shouldn't have slipped past them. But Jared Goff's, he was okay with LA. He's not in LA anymore. He doesn't have Sean McVay anymore. He's a significant downgrade from Matt Stafford. So I don't know what they're doing, honestly. Yeah. They might be one of those teams that's trying to tank next year. And then they hit the at Baltimore off. host Baltimore stretch, which will be really interesting. I do think that that second game between the two of them becomes a must win for the team that lost the first one.
Might be.
I think if the Browns lose that first game, or if the Ravens lose, whichever one loses that first game needs to win the second one, or they're obviously not going to win the division at that point, and they're going to be in trouble of making the playoffs. So I think that second game, luckily the Browns get it at home, I think that's going to be as high stakes a game as we've seen in quite some time. I mean, we had the Steelers game last year, I think was in Pittsburgh though, right? Second Steelers game, the second one.
Well, if the second regular season game,
the second one
was at home, because that was
okay. That was the one they needed to win. Okay, yeah. So that one was at home. Sorry, I thought that one.
Then the playoff game was the third game of the season. That was at Pittsburgh. Yeah.
But so I think that's that little stretch of those two games, and it's weird. Like, it's really weird. I don't know why they did it that way. I feel like it's one of those things they put the schedule together and then looked at the end. They're like, ah, shit. Well, fuck it. We're not going to go back and change it now. Like, we're done. Whatever. Just let them do it. Vegas should be a decent game. They should be the better team. There's a lot of teams a lot of games you look at and you're like, okay, they should be the better team, but it's not a pushover. And that's the way the NFL is supposed to be.
That Vegas game, by the way, that's another one that could go to primetime because that
you
right
think?
Now,
I don't think.
No,
Vegas
because
is at
that's,
that point.
Well, no, that's the thing. Like, that's there that week they earmarked, I think, four or five games that a few of them are going to get pulled from Sunday and made those Saturday NFL Network exclusive national games. Remember a few years ago, Baker's rookie year, when they had that Saturday night game against the Broncos at Mile High?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we watched it
at Rolos. Yeah, we watched it at Rolos. That was one of those, and because that was the game that had the most playoff implications, they put that on Saturday night primetime. This is one of those games that's in the mix to get that for that slot there.
You think so? Okay.
Well, no, I mean it is. They.
No, I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't see the. Maybe I'm more down on the Raiders. I think the Raiders.
Yeah,
are
I mean the
out
Raiders are. Both teams are going to have to be in the mix, but they picked a pool of five games, I think, to pick from to make national
to and, give themselves
and
some options.
And they've listed those five games as TBD, and the Browns Raiders is one of them. So
interesting.
Yeah,
I mean, then they finish at Green Bay on Christmas Day, at Pittsburgh, and host Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. So we ran through the whole thing, right? And there's not that many gimmies, and it's good because, I mean, it means that there's a lot of parity in the league.
That is the National Football League.
Oh, yes. Thank you for telling me. I forgot what the letters stood for. and it's weird because I feel like even last year, I looked at the Browns' schedule, even when I thought they were going to be good. Like, I don't know if I thought they were going to be as good as they were.
Yeah.
I don't know if I thought they would win 11 games, but I thought they'd be around 9 or 10 and be really competitive in most games.
Yeah.
I looked at their schedule and I told myself, okay, which ones – do I feel like they have a really good chance of winning? And then I would look and be like, okay, there's a couple. That's going to be really tough. That game, I don't know if they can win. There's not a lot of games on the schedule where I look at it, I'm like, okay, they have a great chance of winning it. Or I shouldn't say that, actually, because I think they have a great chance of winning every game. And that's sort of the point I'm getting at. Like, there's no games that are pushovers that are going to be easy. But I don't know that if you look at the teams that have been great, like the Patriots, well, the Patriots played in that garbage division, so they're maybe not a great example. But like the Chiefs, even last year, they were coming off a Super Bowl win. They probably looked at their schedule and said, okay, most of these games are going to be good games.
Yeah.
A few will be a much better team and we should win them. But it's when the expectations are higher, I think you look a little more critically and maybe you're a little less optimistic into every game. While with the Browns prior, I was looking for which games might be a win. Now I'm looking for which games might be tricky and might they lose.
It's a very different mindset now.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Yeah.
And I think talent-wise, roster-wise, the way that the team is built, I think they're as good as anybody. But it's going to be about putting it together on the field. Obviously, big changes on the defensive side and all this stuff, but it's exciting. It's fun. Like, it's nice to look at it this way as opposed to the way we've looked at it for so long. And And I have no complaints. Like, I don't, yeah, maybe the schedule isn't great because our primetime games are on the road most of the time or whatever, but you know what? I feel like they have a chance to win every game. So I'm not going to complain that much.
I'm hearing 17-0.
I believe it's 20-0. First 20-0 team ever.
Mark it down, folks.
Let's go. Let's go. You heard it here first.
Let's go.
May 20th, 2021. Cleveland Browns. Let's fucking go. Yeah, finger guns. Yeah, so I don't know. It's weird. It's really weird because I think because they proved so much last year, it was the first time. And I think last year most people went into the season cautiously optimistic. We've thrown caution to the wind this offseason. Everybody's all in and ready.
There's nothing measured about it.
There's no tempering of expectations whatsoever. No. And that's pretty fucking fun, honestly. Like, it's it cool. Is. I like it.
It is good. Do we want to spend 2 minutes talking about the Columbus SC?
Sure.
Back to the crew?
Sure.
I was dumbfounded by why they wanted to make this change to begin with. I actually wasn't. Let's be 100% clear. Neither you nor I are hardcore MLS fans. I know exactly.
I can count on zero hands the number of Columbus Crew games I've watched in the last 5 years.
There is one player on their roster who I can name right now, if I'm being 100% honest, and that's because he was a guest on our show last summer.
I could only name one. I didn't realize he got traded to the Crew.
He did.
Okay, so, didn't realize that. So now I can name two.
There you go. Yeah, but just from a pure branding, marketing, sports identity standpoint, I can at least feel like I can contribute 2 cents on that. And I was really shocked that they tried this, considering it's the Haslams that own the team, and they just stepped in the exact same pile of shit with the Browns about 5 or 6 years ago.
With those dog shit uniforms.
They had to immediately try to reverse course on that, and I was really surprised that they were able to pull the U-turn on this as quickly as they were. So they've technically existed as Columbus SC for 2 games before they were allowed to go back to being called the Crew, and they've already changed the logo to, you know, fix the flag or whatever, and now it says Crew on it again. I still don't think it's particularly great, but, you know, say what you want about that team. It is one of the showcase for, I think it's one of the most well-known franchises in MLS. It's one of the most recognizable brands in MLS. They're a founding member of the league, and they have a lot of brand equity, for better or worse, with the Crew name. And you know, there are parallels to that with the Browns and their, you know, brand identity here in Cleveland, and how well they're known outside of Cleveland, regardless of whether they're good or not. So to kind of punt on that was just really strange to me, especially because when they said that they wanted to do that, they wanted to have a more global brand and appeal to more people outside of Columbus. And to me, if you're trying to become more global, why are you going to focus on the part of your name that is the more geographic specific part of your name? Like, why wouldn't you just go by Crew?
Yeah. I don't really get the whole logic behind what they decided to go with. What I will say is I found it kind of obnoxious that all the like hardcore Crew fans, and neither one of us are part of that, obviously.
No.
A while back when the Columbus Crew were destined to be the Austin Crew, and these Save the Crew people, who are hardcore Crew fans, God bless them, piped up and did everything in their power to get the Crew to stay in Columbus. Ultimately, they were successful. But they were successful because Jimmy Haslam and that group, and I don't know who else is in this group. I don't think it's just him, but someone stepped up and said, you know what? Okay, we'll put up the money. We'll make that. We'll do what is necessary to keep this team in Columbus. Those guys stepped up and did that, and they decided, you know, for all intents and purposes, we think this would be better for this product. We're going to keep this team here, but we're going to change the branding a little bit. We're going to change the name. We're going to shift the logo, all this other crap that ultimately doesn't matter. And all of that, like, no one cared. All these, like, crew people couldn't care less that not that long ago, this guy was coming in and saving your team.
That's true.
Like, I will say, let the guy do what he wants. Who gives a shit what the team is called?
What would the reaction have been if when the Browns returned in 99, they were something else? Because they were
the Browns were so weird.
That group was very, the Al Lerner and all those people were very conscientious of the name, the colors, keeping the uniforms exactly the same.
I feel like that was more about not letting the Browns play in Baltimore than it was about keeping the Browns in Cleveland.
I think
so if this soccer team was going to become the Austin Crew, and you know, then I would get all the outrage. But I feel like you should have. And I'm not one of these guys who defends Jimmy Haslam, obviously, but I feel like you should have just given him a little leeway. If they want to try this different logo, who gives a shit? You're still going to call them the Crew. That's the same thing with like the Indians. No matter what they change the baseball team's name to, everyone's still going to call them the Tribe. So what do you give a shit?
And they're still not going to go to the games.
Exactly.
But I will say I agree with that. But the one thing I will counter with, though, is the more you hear about the process and the thinking that
it was a little clunky, it was a little messy. Sure,
it defied all logic. I mean, they really almost went out of their way to not involve the most hardcore supporters of the team that, you know, are theoretically your biggest spenders, your best customers. And there was one in particular, I guess, did get a chance to talk to the person who was steering this for the Crew. And they laid out for him, like, this is a bad idea. You're going to get a ton of backlash on this. And here's why. And, you know, laid out all these reasons and said, you're going to lose 8,000 season ticket holders if you do this. Now, whether they should lose 8,000 season ticket holders for tweaking the name or not, that's a different discussion. But the guy and the crew was told, hey, if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And his response was, well, we might lose those 8,000, but what if we get another 15? And it's like, that's the wrong answer to your diehards.
That's not how it works.
No. And
you're lucky you have those 8,000 at all.
Right.
No one's jumping on board because
I don't know how you think you're going to get 15,000 more by calling yourself Columbus SC, but
it's not the NFL.
The thinking was just flawed from the get-go. I'm just really surprised that, and I guess MLS plays more fast and loose with their brand identities than
they kind of have to
than the NFL. But yeah, that they could pull the plug on something that quickly, because normally, I mean, you know, the NFL, you change
your uniform,
you're
stuck with it for 5 years.
5 years, you're stuck with those jerseys. Yep. Which we learned the hard way here. Mm-hmm. The NBA has less restrictive requirements, but I know those things are approved at least 2 years in advance. Like, I know that their art director that they brought in, I just read an interview last week that he's already designed jerseys for the team for the next 2 years. I'm guessing those are their next two city editions or something. But those things are way in the pipeline, way in advance. So to be able to just, you know, slam on the brakes and say, oh, yeah, we're not actually going to be Columbus SC after two games is kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, good on them. And I don't know. They probably should have fleshed all that out before they announced anything.
Right.
Truth be told, might have been a nice little promotional thing for them. And we're like, hey, if we announce it and people hate it, we change back, they'll go buy more shit.
New Coke.
right, exactly. Meet the new Coke, same as the old Coke. Yeah. And so I don't know. It's one of these things that honestly I don't really care about. I feel like both sides were a little bit irrational. The crew side with just jumping to it without getting more feedback from the people that love the team and are the ones that you really need to keep supporting them. But at the same time, I also feel like the people that were like up in arms and didn't consider it even remotely for a little bit were like, these guys just bailed you out and kept your team. Maybe give them a little bit of like a little bit of leeway to do what they want. Like, yeah. Let's be honest. You would love for this to be your team. It's not your team. They paid to keep this team your team. Maybe let them do a little bit of what they want. Yeah, exactly. Like, is it really that big of a deal? Yeah. I personally didn't think it was. The soccer fans in Columbus had disagreed with me, and they got their way. So, I mean, more power to them. Maybe they've learned, hey, if we just bitch enough, we'll get our way forever. That's going to run out eventually. At some point, that won't work. But they're batting 1,000 so far, so more power to them.
There you go. Whew. All right, man. We have gone well north of an hour here.
I love it. Yeah, lot to talk about.
Yeah, good stuff all around. What do you say we close up shop?
Do it. Take it home.
All right. As a reminder, we are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Spotify. We're on all the other podcast listening platforms that you might like to catch us on. So go find us on there and subscribe to the show if you haven't done that already. Of course, you can also stream us on waitingfornextyear.com. And as a reminder, we are part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. And I'd like to say hello to our friends over at Evergreen. And yeah, that's going to do it for us for this week. So for Travis Hewley, I am Tom Valentino. Spin the nail in the coffin, and we will catch you again soon.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up?
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.